Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today, and my guest today, Brian Brown. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, love having you. Brian, so you've been teaching here at Jersey for how many years now? Teaching and coaching.
Teaching and coaching for... coming up on 34 and a half, 35, yeah.
Are you like one of the old timers there?
I am one of the old timers at this point. I think on the seniority list they put out every January, I think I made it to number 3. I'm not going to get to the top, but yeah. I think I'm number 3 based on my alphabetically. There's some people that are also number 3 with me, but
wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time in one spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
especially
one
when
school.
You were younger and you always looked at that list and saw those people at the top and how old they were, you know.
Yeah. I know. That's cool. And you're a family man.
Yep. My wife, Michelle's a retired administrator from the district. She's ended up being ended her career at Grafton Elementary as the principal there. And we have two daughters, Kristen and Allison.
How old are your daughters?
Kristen's 32. She lives in St. Louis.
I got you.
She's working on her master's in social work. She's going to finish it up here in the recent months to come. And Allison is a new mother, relatively new, with our first grandchild, Margie. So we've kind of lost our minds with a year and a half granddaughter.
Yeah,
so
that's
she's
cool.
Busy with her. And
that's fun.
Her husband, Nick, they live here in town. So, yeah.
And yeah, that's nice.
Yeah,
everybody's
it's great
close.
To see him. Absolutely. We love it.
So did you, when you, I know you coached girls basketball for how many years?
I was assistant coach for 5 years and a varsity coach for 13, so a total of 18 years.
Did your daughters play?
They did until they got into theater and music. They were more into that, but they played when they were middle school, but I didn't pressure them to play.
Yeah.
You know, for me, and it wasn't really.
You know what? It's kind of hard, isn't it?
It was probably a blessing in disguise, you know, yeah. They got to do their thing, and then yeah. We didn't bring that stuff home and have to deal with it in the house, so it was probably all right.
Yes. Yeah. I coached my kids a little bit, but, you know, I was better off coaching others than my own kids.
I coached my daughter, Kristen, in golf, and it's just different when your kid's playing and you're...
Are we too hard on them? Is that...
I don't know.
Too perfectionist on them?
I think when your kid's playing, it's just a little more nerve-wracking. You know, you want them to do well, and you're invested, and they're invested, and you're just, you know, it just becomes a different animal, I think.
It is. It is different. But you grew up... where'd you grow up at?
In Grafton, basically.
So you've been here. You went to Jersey grade school, high school, and ended up teaching here.
Yep.
Yeah. So you must like it around here.
I do. I do love it.
Yeah.
It's a good place to raise your family, and it's good schools.
Yeah. It's a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Grafton, you growing up as a kid, not near the Grafton that is today.
No. No, my parents had a place called the Red Lantern in 73, and the flood came up, kind of took that out. It was a restaurant.
Oh,
and
they did?
Yeah. And then my dad was the superintendent at Pierre Marquette, so I grew up there mostly from about 73 to 88. In the meantime, they opened up another restaurant in the same building in Grafton around 90, 91.
And they got flooded.
And they got flooded in 93.
Yeah.
So it was called Brown & Company. And, so they took on two businesses and two major floods there.
Is
so.
There a restaurant there today in the same
no,
building?
No, the building's gone. It's kind of where, it's kind of in front of the wharf there, in front of the harbor.
Okay.
It's kind of right in front of that. Yeah.
All right. So that's all parking lot today.
Yeah, it's all parking lot pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good location.
Yeah. It's right near the Grafton pub that's there now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good location.
Yeah. So back when your dad had the restaurant, I get, did your mom work there too?
Yeah, they both
and,
did.
And you did?
I was a little too young at that point.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, they wouldn't want me to do anything there.
Okay. So, now, were you an only child?
I have a brother, Tim.
Okay.
Yeah, he's here locally, works at Walmart, and he lives in Grafton still.
Okay.
Yeah, he's younger.
Now, you said that you ended up going to Millikan.
I did.
University.
Yep. Went to Millikan in Decatur.
How was Millikan?
It was great. I've had had a great experience there. I still have buddies that we play golf every, we're going on like a 22 or 3 year golf trip that we still go on. And I go back, we're going back this year for homecoming up there actually. So we like it. We had a great experience up there. I played football a couple years. And then after that, I got my student teaching done at SIUE. So I went to those two schools.
Okay. And then right out of SIUE, you worked at, they didn't need as many teachers back then. So it was a little bit harder to get a job from what I understand.
Yeah, there was in the, so around the early 70s, I think there was a wave that all got hired.
Yeah.
And they were kind of coming to the age that I am now. And we're kind of getting ready to come out. But in 89, 90, there wasn't.
You said you worked at the Raging Rivers.
I did. I got hired on down there basically when they broke ground.
That's so, what I was wondering.
So I was involved in the construction part of it. Stood
saving
there.
Lives every day.
I was knee deep in concrete in the wave pool and the lazy river when they were pouring it. But then I was there on opening day when they opened it up. I think it was July 1st in 1990s when it opened.
Yeah. No,
that... And I was there for probably another 3 years after that while I was doing some student teaching.
Let's talk about some girls basketball. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, back in the heyday, you were pretty good back in those days.
Yeah. In 1989, there was the team that Denise Kelly, now Denise Callow, she took that team to the state tournament. I wasn't a part of that program at that point, but got on right behind that. And we'd won a string of conference titles there. I think it was like 14 in a row, regionals about the same. And then I took over the program, or John Grizzle took it on after her. John actually was the coach that started it back in 77, 78. He was coach for 3 years, and then Denise was about 10 years, and then John for about three more. So I was 3 years under Denise, 2 years under John, or excuse me, 2 years under John, 3 years under Denise. And John lost three super sectionals in a row.
Wow.
We had a heck of a team.
But back then, there was only two classes. Too.
Yes, we were a 2A school.
And today it's four.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
We ran into some buzzsaws in the super sectionals, Centralia. And it lost 2 years to Centralia and another year, I think, to Paris.
Why would you say that your teams were so strong back then?
Well, we had the elementary program was really well put together at the time, and I think there was a lot of parent backing on with some of these players too, because they were going to leagues and camps in St. Louis or someplace like that, and they were really getting the fundamentals, learning the game. I just think we had a really, really great feeder program coming in, and we're just. And I think we're ahead of the game, too. I don't think there's a lot of schools that had all that.
Yeah.
So we were a little bit ahead of the game, I think.
Was there, one thing people talk about today, that there's so many choices for kids now that there wasn't in the past. Do you think that played a part at all?
Yeah, I think so. I think I see it all the time. Even a lot of our programs, our numbers are down a little bit. I think it's because kids have different things to do, and they're finding jobs and just different capacities that are really taking up their time.
Now, Coach, actually, I coached some girls basketball early in my career when I was teaching. What did you find different? Or did you ever coach boys? You coached boys baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
Yeah. What do you find different from girls, coaching girls, coaching boys?
I had the girls I had throughout those years. They seemed to be a little bit more mature. I felt like they were smart, better students than a lot of the boys I had.
That's what I was thinking. And girls seemed, yeah, that, yeah. They just seemed more mature. When you were talking to them, they were intent and they picked stuff up and they really,
yep.
Maybe a little more disciplined on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. For some reason, I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, whatever the case was, it was a good program, and we had some good players at the time. So
the only thing that I don't know if this happened to you, but that happens with girls that doesn't happen with boys, and that's crying.
Yeah, there's some crying
and a little bit of crying. It's like,
yep.
Oh gosh, what did I say?
Yep.
It's like, dang,
Yeah, I try not to treat them too much different. They're still athletes. The end goal is still the same. Try to get better and try to you know, win and be successful. But, you know, I treat them the same. It wasn't didn't treat them any less, you know, wasn't any less rough on them or than I would be on the boys. But
now, whenever I was doing it, this was back in '80s. It seemed like the schools that I was at, the girls' program was second to the boys. You know, they always had to take the later gym times, mm-hmm. the secondary gyms, just kind of put on the back burner. I don't know if that has changed.
It has. Today, it has a little bit. Our facilities at the school now are great because we have lots of space and a couple gyms. But back when I was coaching, Jim Mungie was the boys' coach, and we would have and Stoat Reed are both. We would have alternated days. So if you had a game, like the girls played on Mondays and Thursdays, so the boys would get the gyms on Mondays and Thursdays. They played on Tuesdays. We would get the gym on Monday to practice because the boys had a game on Tuesday, vice versa. I may have that a little bit screwed up, but we rotated. There was a method to the madness.
So it wasn't – it worked out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now you coached some golf as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy coaching golf?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I to leave the atmosphere of the gym and the kind of the intensity of basketball and all that is that comes with that, then to take over golf and you're outside and you're on a golf cart sitting under a tree watching players play and trying to, you know, help them navigate the course. It's a little bit different, but I've really enjoyed it, and I did that for the last 16 years. Head boys not basketball, but golf coach.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Brian Brown with me. Longtime teacher, gonna retire this year.
Yeah,
last year.
Yep. Final quarter's coming up Monday.
So. Got him here in the studio. Who were some of your top golfers that you ever coached?
I had Mason Seymour made it to the state tournament. I can't remember what year it was. 2021 maybe, I think. Mm-hmm. And then. I also had a girl, Brooke Tuttle, made it to the state tournament for girls right before him. Might have been 19, I think.
And she was pretty good. She was pretty good athlete.
Yes, yes. Period. She was a basketball player and a softball player. Went to West Point. Yeah, she. Had,
yeah,
yeah. She was and she was a really good golfer. She was really easy to coach. I didn't do much to help her. She had a great swing already. Was a smart player. Could hit greens, hit fairways. And she won a regional, I think it was down in Waterloo at the Acorns. And so she then placed third in a sectional, and that got her to the state tournament. So
being a golf coach, what do you think is the main ingredient for a person to have in order to be a golfer? What do they need to listen to? What do they need to do? Because I'm sure you had to get through some hits.
Yeah, the between the ears is the biggest thing. You know, I think the good golfers are smart. They think about the game different than maybe you or I do, who just go out and hit it as far as we can. But they're trying to place the ball, thinking shots ahead.
But I mean, as far as coaching those kids, those golfers.
Yes.
What do you try to get through to them, or what? Who's got it? Who's you can say, oh, this guy's going to, I can teach him something. Others you go, I can't teach him
anything. Yeah, I don't mess much with swings and things like that. I'm more of a course management guy. Uh-huh. I'll go with them and say, hey, you know, trouble's on the right. Let's stay away from that if we can.
Mm-hmm.
Hit it down the left side and just kind of go through the course with them and try to make them know where are you going to miss at? Where's a good place to miss? And where are you going to leave yourself some green so that you can get up and down and things like that? Yes. I really wasn't too good on showing them how to swing and
now,
things like
are
that.
Are you a pretty good golfer yourself?
Certain days, yes. Yeah. But most days, no.
You coached PE, or you taught PE.
Strictly PE for the first 10 years or so, and did also behind the wheel driver's ed while I was doing that. For the first 10 years.
Is PE, is that a pretty good class to teach? I mean, is that good?
Yeah, it's good. Back when I first started, everybody took PE except for the athletes. They had an eighth hour or early out if they were in season. But pretty much everybody took PE. And we had some great days back in the days that we've been playing pickleball in PE for the last 30 years. I know a lot of people think pickleball is new, but we've been doing it PE for 30 years. So we had a lot of games like that we play and teach them rules, you know, knowledge of the games, try to teach them some lifelong games. We even did golf a little bit and bowling, things like that in PE. So, yeah.
That's good. And then driver's ed, you were a driver's ed teacher.
Yeah.
Was that a little scary at times?
Well, we've had some scary moments at times. Usually I tell people it's really not the kids that scare me or worry me too much. It's the people that have had their license for 10 or 15 or 20 years like us that are on the road and may be a little aggressive or in a hurry or distracted, and they almost run into us. Because when I'm in the car with kids, they're really pretty cautious, and you know, mm-hmm. I've got a brake on my
side. Are they a little nervous?
Some are. Some are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of them are nervous when they get in the car the first time. But once we get going, they understand that it's really not that big a deal.
What do you find, what kid you see usually is a good driver right off the bat? What kind of kid? Where does he come from?
Usually it's a kid that's eager to get their license. And when they get their permit, they start driving with mom and dad right away. And that's most kids.
Practice?
Yeah, practice.
Getting those hours. I thought maybe farm kids might be a good
one. They are, yeah.
A lot of them are. They're driving tractors all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that.
But I see there is a group of kids, though, that for whatever reason are a little anxious about it or nervous or just aren't into it, don't care about it. And I think most of the kids really want to get that independence to get away from mom and dad and get on the road and get going. But I do have a small group that are just not interested in driving. So
really?
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know what the reason for that is.
If it's not anxiety, interested in driving. Man, that's the number one thing I wanted.
Me too.
I wanted my license and a car.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the first car you ever had?
72 Pontiac Catalina.
That was a big car.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Well, you're a big guy.
Yeah.
You got a lot of friends.
Sure.
So you needed one, something like that.
Yep.
Did you ever have any fender benders in the driver's ed car?
It's funny you should ask, because I was hoping to retire in May
with a clean record.
Yeah, with a however many days since our last accident. But it was over Christmas break, and we had taken a trip because we have a little more time. We'd gone to Alton, and we're a Homer Adams, and we got rear-ended on the last day of the year, December 31st. So.
Whose fault was it?
It wasn't ours.
That's
right. We were at the light, so we got hit. But that's our only fender bender, knock on wood, since that I've ever been involved in the driver's ed car. So.
Now, have you, because you're a driver's ed teacher, you should be able to drive, you know, really good, because you studied it all, right?
You
have you ever had a fender bender?
I've probably had a fender bender. I don't really
No wrecks or anything?
Not too
wrecks?
Many. Not that I know of, too many that I
You're a defensive
that I remember.
Driver?
Pretty defensive, yes.
Yeah. So what are you're going to be retiring here for long,
yep.
You know, at the end of the year, which is not that far. Then what are you going to do?
Well, probably whatever I want.
Yeah.
My wife and I were going to take a trip, to Europe, in September.
That's cool.
So yeah, we did one a few years ago and we really liked it. So we had one planned in 2020, but of course COVID came.
Yeah.
And we decided we're going to take that one coming up here in September. So we're going to Scotland and Ireland, and we decided we're also going to throw London in because we've been there before, and we decided we're going to go.
You're going to be gone for a while.
A few days, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a couple
Is
weeks.
Is that like a three-week trip?
It's two and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing it with EF Tours, which the school has some trips. That's what we had gone on before. We'd gone on a World War II trip. We did the Path of the Allies, so we flew into London, and then we went across the Channel to Cannes. We did the beaches of Normandy and all that, and then into Paris, Battle of the Bulge into Belgium, and then ended up in Germany for the last leg of that trip.
Now, that type of trip that you went on, now you said that was a group?
Yes.
How many in the group?
In our group, there was about 15 people, and we were linked into a group with I think there was a group from Ohio and a group from North Dakota. We're all on one bus.
Okay.
So they would take us to a hotel, drop us off. They would hand you your key, your room key. It was really, really nice to get your luggage off the bus, get your key, go to your room, And then the next day you get up, you have breakfast, and they would have a tour lined up, and you can hop back on the bus and take off and see whatever sites were set for that day. Also, in that time, we had some freedom. If we didn't want to go to that, we could take off on our own, which we did a little bit of that too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be another one of those type of trips. I think this one is Scotland and Ireland, and it might be, I have a feeling it's a castle tour or something like that. So we're going to go see a lot of the castles over there and things like that.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We went to Ireland a few years ago, and that was fun.
Yeah,
seeing
we're looking
castles.
Forward to it.
Yes. Yeah, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, so we're going to do some traveling. We're my wife and I are avid concert goers, so we go to a lot of concerts. We're going to.
What kind of concerts?
All kinds. Festivals, anything. Yeah.
Like what? Name two.
We go to the Evolution Fest in St. Louis. It's here every September. We do that one. We're going to Red Rocks for the first time in Colorado this July to see the band Cake. If there's any Cake fans out there.
Yeah.
So,
what's Cake? Are they rock and roll?
Yeah.
Kind of
a 90s band.
Yeah. It'll be fun. I've heard good things about it. I've been there, but not when the concert was there. We just looked at it like, oh, that's pretty nice. And then.
It's been on our bucket list. So that's one that we're going to, you know, not check off the bucket list.
Well, we're just about ready to wrap this interview up. Any words of wisdom you'd like to shed on the listeners that they can know that Brian Brown said this and remember this?
Boy, I don't know what it would be.
You don't?
I don't. I don't have any words of wisdom. You could have caught me off guard with that one.
Well, Brian, thanks so much for coming in.
Absolutely.
And you enjoy your years left.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks.